Before he was a week in the village of Banagrihan, the scalper must have sensed that no one liked him. He was the kind of man who attracts unpopularity. A big, shapeless figure, nearly 18 stone in weight, a round, fleshy face made for shying coconuts at, short legs that tapered into natty, incongruous feet, and an atmosphere of mocking superiority about him that cut him off from the family oneness of the village. But if he sensed it, he did not show it. He moved about dealing with the confidence of a friend. Perhaps the most remarkable thing about him was the agility his cumbersome body possessed. When he was examining a heifer or a dropped calf, he glided around it on those pinpoint feet of his massive body almost floating, as if its solid weightiness were only an illusion. And to see him walking up the one mean street that was Banagrihan, you would think he was a schoolboy on vacation. But no man can indefinitely ignore hostility in a village the size of Banagrihan. He has to come to terms sooner or later, or get out. And as the scalper, a name the locals had for every cattle jobber who visited them, had decided that it was time he took root somewhere, and since the cattle trade in Banagrihan promised him a good living, he determined to come to terms. So he planked his bloated body in Maguire's pub every night and dispensed drinks to anyone who would join him. He won over only the loafers of the village at first, McHugh, the taxi man, and Bryson, the doctor's son, and O'Donnell, whose mind was never right since his wife died. But that was court enough to start with. Then, as the months went by and the villagers grew accustomed to the sight of him and got to the stage of making harmless jokes about him, the scalper came to be tolerated in Banagrihan. Not accepted, but tolerated. And that was as much as any stranger could ask. The incident that has been referred to ever since as the Sunday the scalper was arrested in his pelt had its beginning one Saturday evening in mid-August. Maguire's was quiet that evening and the only customers were the scalper and O'Donnell. Then Quigley, the postman, came in. A small, withered man whose face showed the fatigue of every mile he had ever walked with his postbag. Quigley had one weakness. He was an incurable poacher. Everyone knew about it, but it was seldom discussed. It was one of the few privacies that the village respected. And if he did snatch an odd fish from the river during the season, who was there to say a word to such a quiet, inoffensive man? Anyhow, on this mid-August day, Quigley came into Maguire's for a pint. He saw the scalper in the corner but ignored him. It was the scalper who started the trouble, according to Maguire. "What are you having?" asked the scalper. Quigley pretended not to hear. He set his glasses on the tip of his nose and read the paper that was lying on the counter. "Do you hear me, Quigley? What are you having?" "Nothing, thanks," said Quigley. The scalper eased his huge great frame out of his chair, winked smirkingly at Maguire, and sidled over to the postman. "They tell me," he said in a soft, mocking voice, "that the river is low since the good weather came." Quigley went on reading. "And when I was up at the Iron Bridge yesterday morning, I saw a lovely sight." The scalper lowered his voice to a whisper. "I saw a pair of the finest salmon you ever clapped your eyes on. And you know what I thought when I saw them, Quigley? I said to myself, I must tell the postman about those fine fish. He's the only man in Banagrihan who would appreciate a sight like that." Quigley folded his paper then, carefully. "What are you trying to say, cow walloper?" he said at last. The scalper spread his hands out in a gesture of hurt innocence. "All I want to say is this," the scalper went on. "You have a reputation in this town for being a first-class poacher. No, no, wait until you hear what I have to say. I'm willing to bet you £5 that I'll snatch those two fish before you can even find them in the pool. And what's more, Quigley, I'll give you £10 if I haven't the two of them panting in the bank within half an hour. What do you say?" Quigley studied the fat, leering face for a second. Then he spat on the ground. "You big slobbering knacker. You couldn't even squeeze that haystack of a body of yours between the banks of the Danube. Get out of me way and leave respectable citizens alone." Somehow he dodged under the scalper's arm and made for the door, but just as he was about to open it, the scalper burst into a taunting laugh and shouted after him, "Do you know what, Quigley? You couldn't catch minnows in a jam jar. You've never lifted a fish in your life." Back came the postman, and after a lot of abuse and swearing, the arrangements were made. The plan was simple. On the following afternoon, Sunday, the two men were to go to the Iron Bridge at 3 o'clock and enter the water at the same time. They were to use nothing but their bare hands. Hampson was to keep watch with the police, and Maguire was to hold the bets, which had now been doubled to £30, because of the risk that Quigley ran of losing his government position. It was a beautiful Sunday afternoon. Although the contest was to have been a secret, every man and boy in the village turned up. Maguire moved discreetly among the spectators, taking side bets. Everything was in the postman's favour. Years of practice, expert knowledge of the river, the support of the crowd, and the universal conviction that no outsider could ever beat a local. Keen faces were turned towards the contestants. Small boys climbed onto the parapet of the Iron Bridge. As the seconds ticked past, the shouting of the spectators fell, faded into whispers, and died altogether. The scalper and Quigley looked sharply at one another, and the duel began. Quigley was first off. Within 5 seconds, he had slipped out of his clothes and was standing on the bank in his elfin nakedness, his narrow white shoulders hunched in anxiety, his thin arms hanging purposelessly at his sides. He stepped into the water and stood as motionless as a stork, watching. The scalper, it had been agreed, was to start at the north end of the pool. He walked the distance, a matter of 15 yards, backwards, watching the postman undress and slip into the river. Then, as if he had the whole day before him, he took off his coat and his tie and his collar and shirt, folded them neatly, and laid them in a pile on the grass. His confident smile never left his face. Then he took off his trousers, folded them too, and placed them beside his other clothes. From the top of the bridge a child shouted, "Fatty!" And the scalper turned and waved warmly in acknowledgement. Then he sat slowly down on the bank, pushed himself gently off and entered the water without breaking its calm surface. The length of the pool separated the two men, and the watchers swiveled their heads back and forth like spectators at a tennis match. Quigley was the quicker of the two. He lay down in the water and began to move like an otter along one side. The scalper's manoeuvres had none of Quigley's agility, but he worked with more thoroughness and confidence. And he was the first to spot a fish. It lay close to the bank, chewing listlessly. The scalper sank himself cautiously until the water closed above his head, and at the same time he edged towards the salmon, so slowly and imperceptibly that it almost looked as if the bank was moving towards him. His two great arms sank to the bottom of the pool and slept there. Then they floated towards the fish and found its belly. The men on the banks leaned forward, breathless. Suddenly a child from the bridge screamed, "I'll scalper the cattle walloper!" There was a shout of protest from the banks and the fish darted forward and was gone. The scalper stood erect and looked towards the bridge. "You're not giving me a chance, boys," was all he said. But the men were furious. Two or three of them raced up to the bridge and hunted the children home. Then they came back to their positions and settled down to watch again. Even Hampson, who was supposed to be on the lookout for the police, was standing with the others, watching. It was the postman who sighted the second fish. The fish, bigger than the scalpers, lay in live water in the middle of the river. Quigley surfaced a few feet from its tail, filled his lungs with air, and sank again. The men on the banks watched the movements of the white, gnarled body, saw the hands weave, lost them for a moment, saw what looked like legs moving up and down. Then a sudden jerk, a wild turmoil on the surface, and up came the postman with his fingers firmly knotted in the gills of the fish. A cry of joy broke from the spectators. Half a dozen men reached out and dragged Quigley and his flapping fish onto the bank. Someone shouted, "Up and a friend!" And they all gave a "hip hip hooray" for the shivering postman, whose cheeks were wet with tears, or water from the river, no one knew which. The two policemen were on the bridge before anyone saw them. They had parked their car just down the road on the opposite bank and had walked up quietly. The men, contestants and spectators alike, took a step or two backwards as they considered the possibility of escape, and then, realising that it was hopeless and that there was a certain safety in numbers, stood their ground. Under his breath, Quigley muttered frantically, "My job's lost. And me pension. All gone." "What's this?" asked the elder of the two police. He seemed at a loss where to begin in the face of such a blatantly public crime. "I'll tell you what it's all about," interrupted the scalper, who was still naked and dripping. Someone from a distance said, "Don't listen to him, Sergeant, he's an outsider." The older policeman got out his notebook. "Well, speak up," he said. The crowd watched sullenly. "I came up here this afternoon," said the scalper, "and I spotted a fine big fish in the shallow water there below us. And I said to myself, I said, man, that fish is for you. So I took off me clothes and slipped into the water and landed the fish. There she is there, Sergeant, at your feet, God's truth. But just as I was about to step out of the water, Sergeant, I got the wildest cramp in me leg, and damn the bit of me could move. I thought I was lost. I fell back into the water and I began to roar for help. And as luck would have it, wasn't the postman here, Quigley, passing by? And like the man he is, he strips and he leaps to rescue me. But I'm kind of plump, Sergeant, as you see, so the postman here can't haul me out, and me crippled with the cramp. So the both of us starts to roar, and the whole neighbourhood hears us and comes along and drags us out. And that's what the shouting was all about, Sergeant. A cheer for the postman here for rescuing me. May I never see another dawn if I'm telling you a lie." Even if he did not believe the story, there was nothing the sergeant could do but accept it. There were 50-odd witnesses willing to swear to its truth. Being a sensible man, he nodded his head and he told the scalper to get dressed and to come with him to the police station in Ballybeg to make a statement. The policeman got into the car, with the scalper between them. And just as the sergeant was about to drive off, the scalper held up his hand. "Wait, Sergeant, wait." "What is it?" said the sergeant. "Tell me first, what will I get?" "A fine for attempting poaching. £20 at the most." The scalper considered for a moment. "And I'll be free to come back here then. Straight."
"I have no reason to hold you," said the sergeant.
The scalper sank back in the seat. "Drive on, man," he said with sudden fury. "Drive on before I change me mind and jump out and tear that wee runt of a postman to pieces. Do you know something, Sergeant? It's a mystery to me how a man of my calibre can decide to spend the rest of his life with wastrels like those people. It's a real mystery. Drive away before I change me mind." As the car moved off, the sergeant distinctly heard from the other side of the riverbank a cry of, "Three cheers for the scalper!" And a ragged roar of voices lifted in response.